This episode of Find a Way is brought to you by Crooked Path Forge, Gainesville's home for custom-made handcrafted blades by blacksmith Jordan Borstelman. Go to crookedpathforge.org right now and you can use Find a Way's special promo code FINDAHAMMER to get 10% off all products and workshops available on the website. I'm on the website right now. Here are some of the things they've got for sale. They've got a textbook for making your own Viking-era bearded axe, which is pretty badass. They've got a knife for your kitchen, an herb choppa, as it's called on the website, just what you think, for cutting herbs. They've got a crookshank knife for sale. You could buy yourself a Crooked Path Forge t-shirt, very fashionable. There are tons of blades for sale. There's even... There's even a calendar from the Bearded Brotherhood of Blacksmiths. It's a charity calendar, and it says in big letters, NSFA, not safe for anywhere, which has just got my imagination running all over the place. Who knows what the hell is inside this calendar, but I'm sure it's good. Some of the blades for sale, a forest forager for, you know, going through the forest, cutting mushrooms, things like that. But there's also classic kitchen knives, a sheep's foot chef's knife, a hunter's knife, tons of things. And here's the thing, Jordan's knives usually sell pretty quick. So by the time you check the website, these might already be sold out. But it doesn't matter, there'll be more up there. And on top of that, the knives aren't the only thing for sale. The other thing that you can find on the website, crookedpathforge.org, is the schedule of workshops that are offered. Okay, I'm looking at it right now. In November, there's a knife grinding class you can go to. In December, he's got camp knife classes. There are single day workshops where you go in and walk out with a blade that you have crafted yourself in hand. There are multiple day knife workshops. There are hatchet workshops. There are hammer forging workshops. The classes are endless. I highly recommend you try them. I've been to two and loved every minute. It was really enjoyable. Go to crookedpathforge.org, use promo code FINDAHAMMER, and get yourself 10% off a holiday gift, a birthday gift, or maybe just a gift to yourself or to a friend. It's a wonderful way to spend the day, and it's a wonderful product to buy for someone you love, including yourself. Thanks so much. I hope you enjoy the show. This is a travelogue, a chronicle of life's journeys and the bits of wisdom gathered along the path. This is a sketch, a perpetually unfinished portrait of a community of explorers. This is a guide to curiosity and wonder, setting off from Gainesville, Florida. This is Find a Way. Our guests this week are the dynamic duo Katie Levy and Mike McVicker. A partnership for the ages, Katie and Mike are not only co-founders of their beautiful family, hello Marlo and Jojo, but also Gander, a thriving design shop based in Brooklyn, New York. And if you've walked down the aisles of your grocery store in the last 10 years, you've most definitely noticed the funky topography and rich colors that have become synonymous with Gander's attention-grabbing brand identities. The soul and substance of their work is not only a reflection of Katie and Mike's keen sense of style and the incredible talent they attract for their all-star team of designers, but it also reflects their warm-hearted, thoughtful nature, not only towards the companies and products they design for, like Graza Olive Oil, Bonza Pasta, Yellowbird Hot Sauce, just to name a few, but also towards their community. I'm exceedingly grateful for their friendship and for every opportunity I get to connect with them. Thanks so much for finding your way here today. Enjoy.
I'm so relieved.
Yeah. I'm feeling nervous.
Yeah, me too.
Tell me about it.
I'm really nervous.
Well, I am sweating a little.
You are? Okay, you are. Well, sorry, I'm not feeling nervous, but you might be feeling nervous.
Don't speak for me.
No, I didn't mean...
Well, I've just been listening to all these episodes, and they're so good.
Yeah, how do you...
And then I'm like, why is he asking us to be on this thing? Like, what could we possibly add?
So do you need to take, like, a deep breath and, like, do something?
Oh, I feel good. I'm just, like, I'm... It's anticipatory energy.
All you gotta do is just tell me your deepest, darkest fears.
Yeah, secrets and fears.
Perfect.
And I think we'll be great.
Yeah, and we'll work through them.
Right.
And we'll find a way to
nice
figure it out.
Thank you.
You did it.
I appreciate you doing it so I don't have to keep on doing it.
Yeah.
I'm nervous too, by the way. You did me a favor by mm-hmm. suggesting that we use this medium, Riverside, uh-huh. because I'm a creature of habit. I have this weird sense of what simplicity means, which is not necessarily that things are simple, but that I know how to do them, so that makes it simple.
Sure.
And so I was like, oh, okay, so we're going to use this new program that I don't know anything about, and it's not the way I usually do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked into it a couple weeks ago when we first talked about getting together, and I was like, yeah, cool. This is great. I love this. This is good. And I was like, I'm not gonna download it yet. I'm just going to look around. I'm going to check it out, but we'll see.
Yeah.
And today there's like two or three times where before really even trying to do it for real, I was like, maybe I should just text them, see if they can just record it onto their like, I'm sure they have GarageBand. They can just record their vocals onto GarageBand. I'll just record mine onto my program. And yeah. I had this overcomplicated way for us to do it. It's like one computer will be FaceTime and one computer will be recording. And, yep. and I realized, I was like, I should just try this. Just look it up. And like, it threw me a couple of curveballs with like, oh, I have to update this and I'm going to download this. And I was like, yeah, I should probably just quit. I should just quit. And finally I was like, this is ridiculous. I am just going to try it out. And when I finally got it all set up, I was like, okay, yeah, Mike said it was point and click, and that's exactly what it is.
Nice.
So thank you.
Of course. Well, and I also think it's something I was like, well, what are we going to talk today? And then I was like, oh, one of the things that I've been digging, thinking about, talking about recently is the idea of run towards the danger, right. Which there's like a book about it. There was just a This American Life podcast, not to point other people to a different podcast, but
I'm sure they haven't even heard of that one either.
Yeah, it's a new one. So I'd say like, yeah, if you're really stressed like for podcast resources, This American Life is a last ditch effort. But
I'm editing this out.
Great. Perfect. Yeah. Yeah. Just beep it out every time I say it. That would be hilarious. If you listen to beep, it has a great episode about running towards the danger, which is, I mean, probably something you've thought about with this podcast in general, like putting yourself out there, that kind of stuff. And definitely. Like, it's something that I'm trying to figure out how to do more in my life. Like, what are the things that I'm avoiding? Because I'm a creature of habit.
Nature creature is right. You had it right. The first
time. I'm a nature creature of habit as well. And I want to figure out what ways I can run towards the danger, which we could describe more instead of just saying this catchphrase. Because it can lead to discovering better things about you. And
sorry, yourself. I just took a sip of water. Is that gonna be a problem every time?
Let's just start it over. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna cancel. I'm gonna erase this.
Okay.
Just drink all the water that you're gonna need for the
show. Oh yeah.
Okay.
You're supposed to be fully hydrated before we begin.
Drinking water is totally fine. Doing all the normal things that you would do if we were just hanging out, which is what I wish we were doing right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is totally fine. I don't care about any of that stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if it was going to make a giant gulp in the middle of mics. I don't know how microphones work. Like, how much is being picked
should
up?
I'm just like, this is my control self that like wants to like make sure. I'm like, should we tell people where we are and what we're doing? Because like, they may not know. I mean, I guess you might do this in
the intro.
I was
thinking Colin, this is Colin's podcast, and maybe he has some ideas of how he wants to do it. Sorry, Mike, I don't know if you were briefed on. Just kidding.
You'll just shut up and let me run the show.
Host and guest, this is how this works. Let me explain it.
This is funny, too, having video while we're recording it, too, because I'm realizing I've never desired to do video with the podcast, but now that I'm like seeing you guys and I don't know, just I like the vibe of us just like sitting here and you're in your living room and I'm in my little office.
You could definitely offer it as like a downloadable this video if you want to watch these people
for the Patreons.
This is a Patreon bonus.
Yeah, no biggie. I think all of that is fine, and also I think we're doing everything exactly right. I think I already like the direction we're going in. If you had the idea of telling people where you are, so I think you should just go for it. Like, run toward the danger.
Yeah.
Tell people where you are.
Run towards the danger of telling people where I'm located.
Here's my address.
Yeah.
Here's my five greatest fears.
Yeah. I mean, I was just going to say, because if I was listening, but now I'm realizing you're probably going to say this in the introduction, but... because we're doing this remotely, you're in Gainesville, Florida, where we grew up and we were from originally. And now we live in Brooklyn, New York, where we've been for the last like 14 and 15 years. But, you know, no stranger to Gainesville, where you are. No stranger to the room that you're in.
Well, and so I think like that's a perfect place to start there. I mean, going to Brooklyn from Gainesville, I think, is a wonderful version of running toward the danger. I mean, it's exciting, and I know that you went with a lot of confidence, and you went with a lot of drive. And I'm assuming this because I know you. You didn't say like, "Colin, we're going to Brooklyn with a lot of confidence, a lot of drive." But I feel as though I'm accurately evaluating your state of mind going to Brooklyn.
Maybe naive. It's funny because, like, obviously over 15 years, that's like lived in New York, Brooklyn, longer than I've lived in any other city in my life.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
How old are you?
I'm 30. We don't say ages on this podcast, actually.
How is that true?
I'm 38. But I moved from a really small town named Brooker, Florida, to Gainesville when I was in high school and prior to high school. And then I was only in Gainesville from like high school through college, and now have been in Brooklyn for 15 years.
Right. Yeah.
People love when people do math on podcasts.
That's what they're here for. Give them what they want.
All right. So if you count middle school, then I was precisely... And I think there was a certain naivete of being in a certain place. Now we've been here for so long that I know all that I didn't know when I first moved here. And so, like, I don't think there was any sort of grand preconceived notion. Certainly had very different notions about where I wanted to go or wanted to do in New York. I didn't even have my mind set on New York before moving here. And then... where we are now is just so infinitely different and more than beyond what I could have imagined in so many different ways. And so it's kind of interesting to think about, like, it was ill-conceived and naive, but has worked out so far.
Yeah, I feel like, moving to New York is not like, if you really knew what it would take, you wouldn't have confidence. You shouldn't. And I think that, but like everyone who does move here is like, I can do that. It's because they just have no clue. And that's like for the best.
Right.
I had a rocky intro to New York for sure. Kind of how we wound up. It's like our dating story. Have we told you about this?
No.
Yeah. Sleep. I was like moving out of one sublease into another. As you do when you first move to New York, you're like moving 100 times in the first year, just like trying to figure out where to be. And the day of, literally, I have like my suitcase packed and the cab is ready to go. And like, I think I get a text from the woman whose home I'm supposed to be moving into. That's like, sorry, we're actually not moving out. Like, the place didn't accept our dog, so we have to stay put. Like, so sorry. I'm like, I am driving to this place right now. And I was just like, where to go? Like, cabbie, take me to the Empire State. No, I was just like, where am I supposed to go? So I mean, luckily had like plenty of friends at the time. So I kind of just wound up like couch surfing for a bit before I could like find my feet again. And one of those places was Mike's couch. And we kind of started dating pretty shortly thereafter. So it all worked out in the end. but it was like, it was a wild foray into that life.
Well, I think that's sort of what you're buying into when you run into danger, right? It's danger isn't something that you can predict. Mm-hmm. It's the unpredictable, you know? And that's when you say that you went to New York with naive confidence. I think there's plenty of confidence that isn't naive, you know, like when you're doing mm-hmm. something very simple, like when I'm taking out the trash, I have very informed confidence that I can get from the trash can to the curb safely, likely.
It'd be crazy if we didn't, though.
Right.
That's kind of a funny word.
Well, as human beings, that's what, like, we are, like, our brains do that, though. Like, we create so much confidence around an entire reality that should be a lot less confident. But anyways, we can go into that.
No, I agree with you, yeah. And yeah. I think that confidence actually clouds us from a lot of sort of the magic of the mundane. Yeah. I think the naive confidence, that brand of confidence, is usually the kind that you have with the best things that you do, you know, like mm-hmm. that's what you need to go into. Like you said, like maybe you wouldn't go to New York if you knew how hard it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And yet, like, running into that danger brought about so much challenge, but also like mm-hmm. positive change and positive effect in your lives. I'm curious, and I'm jumping way ahead, like, since we're kind of like doing a little bit of a biography here, but like mm-hmm. you both went to New York separately, and you didn't know each other, did you?
We did.
Yeah, we were in the same design program.
Okay, okay, okay.
We were in the University of Florida graphic design program, which has how many students in a class?
18. Like
18 in a class. So we were a very intimate design studio and like a studio art practice design in the School of Fine Arts. It's the, you know, studio practice environment. So we're up late nights and collaborating together. And we had been working together and knew each other for years before moving to New York.
Okay. I don't know why I had that wrong in my head, but I'm glad I know now. See, this is why we do this.
We weren't super close. I don't think we were super close before.
Mm-mm. Well, what I'm curious about is, as far as, you know, this naive state you're in going into this big adventure, mm-hmm. did either of you have an inkling that you were going to end up starting your own business together and, you know, prospering the way you have, like creating this like behemoth of a well,
behemoth.
I get it. I understand.
No,
why
good. That's no, it's a behemoth. You were right. It's a behemoth.
Here's the thing. I think you're right. Like, maybe on maybe as far as like literal size of the company, it's not a big deal. But as far as like the level of success that you've had with Gander in New York City, like with all these like other competitors, it does mm-hmm. seem like a feat that could be described as a behemoth feat. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's what I mean. But did you go there thinking like, I'm going to go to New York City, I'm going to start my own business, I'm going to, you know?
No. I
got so far as like, I'm going to go to New York and I've got this really amazing internship lined up, which by the way, fell through almost immediately upon arrival. Another. But like, I found something else, but like, that was literally as far as I got.
I think those are two great New York stories.
They're great. Like, it's classic.
You had an internship that was offered to you and like,
by Pentagram, which is like one of the biggest agencies in the world and like everyone's like most like ideal place to go work.
Which,
like,
you eventually, you know,
I did eventually work there.
Yeah. But then that and the apartment falling through are just like prototypical New York City like stories of New Yorkers are not mean. And we don't have to go down this rabbit hole of like, you know, are New Yorkers nice? But New Yorkers just don't have time. And there's no, we ain't got no time to wait on nobody. And I don't care if I screw you over. I don't care if me laying on my horn is waking up your baby during her nap. I need to get where I need to go. And that could be perceived as mean or inconsiderate, but I think there's, I think it is. But like, there's a certain amount of like, there's a massive machine of New York City that is like plummeting towards or shooting off to the stars or plummeting towards the earth or whatever it is. It's either going up or going down. And there's no one's gonna stop it. And that usually isn't translated into people's day-to-day actions and whether they're polite enough to tell someone that, oh, there might be a chance that your apartment may not happen if something might go astray. Like in other cities, people would really be hedging their bets and over-communicating. In New York, it's like, no, it doesn't matter if you're screwed. I'm the one who needs to, you know, make sure that I have a place to live, even though, you know, it's screwing you over too. I think that's a classic thing. And then you can, in New York City, you can either internalize that as like a stress, which can definitely happen, or you can see it for what in a sense of like, this isn't like mean or nice. Mm-hmm. It's just the reality of the universe of New York City.
I do think that was like the one thing that I did have in me, if not confidence, the understanding of that. Like, I never took it personally. I was just like, when I was without a job, I'm just like applying to like 100 things a day. I'm just like, it's just a numbers game. Like, I just got to apply. Like, maybe 1 in 1,000 will like get back to me. And it's just like, you can't take it personally. And like from the early days in New York, I do feel like I had that, which is like, I think required to make it. Cause yeah, it's not really personal. But to your question of like, did we have it? Like our sights set on that, definitely not from the beginning. And I'd say not even when we kind of quit our jobs and like went freelance together, which was really just like, let's see if these fun side projects are gonna be something we can work on full time. Like, didn't really, I never could have really imagined this, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree. I did not. I mean, I was pretty sure I was gonna design gig posters and album covers for bands. Pretty much professionally for the rest of my life. And I couldn't imagine like not doing that. Like, I was just like a very like naive kid coming out of school, which like people do that. But it turns out those jobs actually do not pay a livable wage in nearly any city, New York or not. So it turned out like, that things went a very different direction, I think, for both of us compared to what we had maybe thought was even possible.
Sure. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well,
I like that we got, I'm glad that we got Mike's New Yorker accent and the band poster artist.
Yeah, so there's, that's like, two of like five. There's, yeah. There will be for sure a British one coming. Australian if you're lucky. And then I don't know, there's probably a last lingering one.
Yeah, I didn't know that there was an accent for a gig poster designer, but
well, me neither. I don't know what to call that one.
Yeah, that one's very,
it was like a little bit Southern
living
California.
In Venice, like why?
Yeah, okay. There we go. Yeah, okay, Southern California. Yeah.
Yeah, the Californians.
It's just like natural poster makers over there.
Yeah,
but like you meant like designing posters for like Common Grounds.
Yeah, and like not really designing posters for money, but more like designing posters for like trade. Like you give me 4 gallons of organic, fair trade. Well, I guess this is the trade, but organic
goat
honey,
milk.
Clove.
Yeah,
clove.
Fair trade goat milk.
Yeah, and I'll give you like a dope poster from for your band.
Because the guy who's selling goat milk is also in a band.
In a band.
Yeah. Right. I love this little reality.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. We could keep going.
This is what people are here for.
I don't know what I would do in this community, though. I feel like, I was like, I'm sorry, guys.
Like, what do you have to offer? Or how would you survive?
Both.
Both, I guess. They're kind of required to
You guys sit and talk to me about this?
I'll interview you in exchange for... I got nothing. You got to move elsewhere. You can't live in Southern California. Not with those skills.
I think this is interesting, like, where we're going, because... So before this, before we connected, I thought it would be, I've never done this for any of the other interviews, but for us, I thought it would be appropriate to pull some cards.
Okay. All right. All right. Okay.
Here we go.
All right.
So the first card was the moon.
Wait, hold on. When did you pull them? While we've been talking?
No, like right before we connected. Nice. Like I did it like 5 minutes before.
Oh, yes.
This is good.
Just to see like where. So I'm only going to tell you. See, I feel like the first one you guys just talked about. We just talked about the moon, which is the principle of choice making and authenticity, right? Huh. This is the card. This the symbol referred to as the karma card, meaning the work that needs to be done. Whoa. Right, making choices. The ultimate work to be done each day is to choose whether we will support our authentic self or support our false persona or dutiful self. Right.
So
every day we're at the gates making choices about leaving old known worlds or going through the gates to explore new worlds.
Whoa. Whoa. How did we? I love this so much.
Magic. Yes.
Magic.
Yeah, so like,
if there is a card that goes with like running toward the danger,
yes,
I mean that seems like the one, and
really
I think
is.
That you guys really, I can't speak for anybody else, although I think it's probably pretty accurate, but to me, you guys do sort of embody the concept of like really going for it, you know, really, really taking that chance and going for it. And it's not just with Gander, although that is like a great example of it. Not just moving to New York, but like you guys keep doing it. You do it like, you know, like, when you guys adopted Jojo, your dog, that was, you know, that was not going to be an easy thing. And you knew it from the start. But you did it, you know, and like when you bought your apartment, that's like a big buy-in, you know, it was a big thing to do. Mm. Now you guys have a baby. And of course, like that's not an easy thing to do. And I know that all those things, it's not like you did it, you know, blindly, but I do feel as though there was some of that like run into the danger, naive confidence that you go into, and you consistently do it. And I think you consistently show that, like, yeah, it's not easy and it's really hard and it's really challenging. And yet, like, I don't think, I don't mean to speak for you, but it doesn't seem to me that you regret any of those decisions at all.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah. I think that...
Sorry, wow, I'm totally about to cut you off. You want to...
I would prefer you cut me off and then I will come back around.
Yeah. At first I was like, I don't know if I like feel like it's interesting that you see us this way. And then I'm thinking like, I actually agree with you. And not only that, but I think I'm most comfortable running toward the danger. Like I think that's kind of like my current like existential crisis is like in feeling stagnant. I feel much more comfortable, even if I'm going towards something where I'm like, I don't know where this is headed, but it's like momentum. I feel much more comfortable there than like, I think it's my like achievement oriented personality. Mm. Whether that means just like, not necessarily like achievement in terms of like success, but like doing things. I have a hard time just like, this is just like another example, but just like a hard time relaxing or just, I've gotten better about it. But like, I used to be like, oh man, I'm kind of tired. I kind of want to take a nap. And I'm like, no, you can't take a nap. That's you, there's things to do. You got to keep going. And it was just like, and now I'm much better about not doing that. But anyway, I feel like I kind of operate in that mode almost. What were you going to say? Do you remember?
I do. I mean, I agree that you are, you very much run towards like the bigger vision of things and can embrace the dream and the vision of something. And I think that's where we complement each other the most, is where you oftentimes will have a vision or idea, and I have those as well, but Katie often is much better at dreaming and having a vision of something and then working towards it to achieve it. And I'm, for a quote-unquote creative, I'm actually very practical, sometimes too rational and like unemotional. I can't remember what my like personality type was, but I did the test in college, and like in stressful situations, my creativity doesn't go up, but my rationality goes up. So wow. Like I actually, in a stressful situation, I'm a really good person to have around because I'm not going to be emotional, much to the chagrin of Katie in like stressful situations where a little emotion might help.
Chagrin, the word that you use?
Isn't it? Much to the disappointment or frustration never, of Katie sometimes.
I don't know. Am I chagrining right now?
No. I chagrin in the face of, of danger.
Me too. I do.
Just chagrin and bear it.
Yeah. Just chagrin and bear it.
Oh, you kicked me in my chagrin. That's good.
Oh, it's perfect.
Love that. I think in such stressful situations, I get more rational. And so like, I actually have a hard time making decisions. And I was going to go down this rabbit hole of like, freedom of choice, or the idea of free will and whether that exists. And like, sometimes it's really easy for me to either convince myself or see that I made any choices in my life ever? Has actually the path of my life like been the result of, you know, external circumstances or smaller decisions that then become reverberated into larger decisions? But actually making an active decision to do X, Y, and Z, start a design studio, have a baby, you actually have to make a decision at some point. But I'm actually function better not actively making those decisions, but actually working towards a day-to-day like feeling of completing a task and staying very rational and heady with it. Like, I don't function well at like just thinking, dreaming big. So that's where I was going to go with it. The idea of like, are we ever making any decisions? Mm.
That's one that, I mean, we've had some really good discussions on that topic before. Mm-hmm. That's like our bread and butter sometimes when we mm-hmm. get to be together.
Yeah.
So when it comes to like whether or not we make decisions, I've had some shifting feelings in that realm that I think, you know, would be great for us to talk about. But I have inquiries about some of the stuff you guys just said. Katie, with your nature, your sort of like go get it nature, you know, mm-hmm. Do you, and I'm glad to hear that you're beginning to make some of those decisions that are like more caring toward yourself, you know, like if you need a nap, you can see the value of the nap. But with the other aspects of it, do you feel as though when you conceptualize this staying active and this like doing, do you, in that concept, do you see an endpoint to it? Do you consider the idea that one day you'll have done enough? Or do you feel as though it's just sort of like an ongoing cycle? You know, like I'm going to take this on and do it until I do the next thing. And that's just sort of your way of life.
I'm very aware that it's just a never-ending kind of like the carrot, the dangling carrot.
It's a never-ending dangling carrot.
It's a never-ending dangling carrot.
That old saying.
That old saying.
It's an infinite carrot.
Yeah, I'm pretty aware of that. And I think that's like life's hardest work is just recognizing that. And questioning, well, you know, why am I, mm-hmm. why do I feel like I have to work toward this? So, I don't know. I'm trying to get better. This is the hardest thing for me, is just like in the moment gratitude. Like, I can be grateful for specific things. Like, I could be grateful for something every day, but like pausing and being grateful for just like the life at large and not, for example, if we talk about our business, I'm 99% of the time thinking about like how much is like I am anxious about and how much I want to change and where I want my business to go. And like 1% of the time being like, you know what, like what we built is really incredible. I'm really proud of it. To 0% of the time, I would say, to be honest. Like, it's very rare that we sit, or that I sit anyway, and I kind of like can reflect on like how much has already been done and just like relax into that. It's so much more often like pushing it to be somewhere else.
I'd say that's one of the most hardest things that I think we experience, is like always feeling like, you know, what we're doing with our business or with our team or whatever aspect of our business could be better, and that it, which is like, you know, I think some people would probably think is insane, just because like, I know we've achieved a lot as a design studio, as a creative agency. But it's also how we got to where we are, knowing that it can be better and wanting to be better. But like, that also robs you of that gratitude.
Do you think that is sort of the place where like ceremony can live to force you to stop and take stock and where you're at? I can remember like rolling my eyes when I was teaching in school. You know, we would have like a Christmas party. We would have like a, you know, end of the year party. We would have these things, and I'd be like, yeah, all right. And you got to go to the party and blah, blah, blah. And I realized that it toward the end of my career teaching, I realized like, oh, this is us acknowledging the end of one phase, you know, and going to another. It's not like, unfortunately, you know, a lot of the times those parties are sort of ill-conceived, and they're just like, okay, we're going to get Moe's to cater, and, you know, you guys show up, and I don't know. It wasn't necessarily the kind of party that I would do to commemorate all the hard work we did, but I see now, like, the purpose was to take a moment and just, you know, hang out with the people that you work with and say, like, yeah, we did this year.
Totally.
This is what we've achieved, and I'm trying to incorporate more of that into my everyday life, just trying to find a way to break out of that never-ending cycle of like go, 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 and stopping and saying like, okay, done, and now starting a new thing, you know? And
it's so important.
Yeah, and I think it's like proven to be how like, not like how we can really actually slow down time, but when you create kind of these like memorable markers, they do divide up time differently. And so otherwise, you know, if like the last 9 years of our business is like sort of a blur, but like if you are intentional about like creating very like celebrations throughout, then you can kind of like reflect on them and break that time up into like smaller chunks, and it becomes more like able to be reflected upon in a kind of cool way.
Yeah. I think it's like something that was really difficult actually during the pandemic, when we were all remote. It was really difficult for us to get together. Like, we didn't do our team retreat we haven't done a team retreat since COVID. And I think sometimes our business and our weekly and day to day feels so tight, and like everything feels like, you know, we're always behind schedule, or we're trying to like, do X, Y, and Z, that like it sometimes feels too tight to like work in things that should be celebratory, taking a moment to reflect. And that's, I think, you know, put on the list of things that we need to work on. But
truly, yeah.
But I think one of the things that we have implemented as a practice is we have a Monday morning stand-up meeting. And during every Monday morning stand-up meeting, we do reflect on achievements from the week before and acknowledge and specifically call out things that happened that were great and moments we had. And then we also have, we share gratitudes every Monday. So everyone shares a gratitude, and there's like bonus points if it's a gratitude from someone on the team or, you know, whatever. Most people are just grateful for like the weekend, but there's also like, specific moments. And that is a moment of gratitude that happens at least once a week during the on the team. And we try to instill that a little bit. But I think it's something that we need to get back to so that we can mark time better, slow things down, mm-hmm. for sure.
I like, you know, I have no idea what the dynamic is within your business with your team and the way you guys work. But from my perspective, knowing you the way I do, I really enjoy sort of imagining you two being like the mom and pop of the shop. Mm-hmm. You know, like I feel as though you would be wonderful leaders in that way, like caring for your employees. And I remember talking to you when a long time ago when you were implementing the gratitudes and things into mm-hmm. your meetings, and I just thought like, yeah, it must be really cool to work for them. You know? it must be like a great atmosphere.
Yeah,
I know that it's stressed sometimes too. I mean, it's never going to be like, especially in your line of business, it's like deadlines and, you know, customers mm-hmm. with sometimes unreasonable requests and things like that. So I'm sure it gets very stressful too, but even more important to have leaders who understand that and are compassionate the way you are naturally.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you could look at it like mom and dad, or like Katie's Jan and I'm Michael.
Love it. I'm Jan. Fair enough.
That's not complimentary to either of you. No,
you're 100% Michael Scott. Oh, and I'm like, God. I'm Jan, but she's not even really in the office on a regular basis.
No, I know. I'm joking. I'm completely.
My baby, you are the baby daddy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. In that situation.
This is going to be like a side quest office podcast.
Yeah. I have to like, sometimes I feel like I'm being like Michael on purpose, but then it comes off maybe not as ironic or as like when I'm being silly or goofy. But I don't know. I like, it's so hard sometimes because like I'm being, you know, obviously not the offensive, like, uncouth things that Michael does, but like just the way he's like ridiculous or like says a silly accent or does something stupid, like I'm like, oh, I'm Michael Scott, that's who I am.
Yeah, I think that's the truth. It is who you are. I don't know if you're saying you sometimes are pretending to be Michael Scott and well, not sure if everyone's catching on to that. It's a.
I thought you were saying like sometimes I feel like I'm being Michael Scott, but then I'm actually like doing a good job at it. So I guess I'm like, you know, and I was like, that is the most Michael Scott thing to say. It's like, I guess I'm like Michael Scott, except like I'm authentic and like I'm actually funny.
No, I mean, that it's tough because like Michael Scott isn't self-aware, and I think I'm pretty self-aware. But then like, I think I can come off as not being self-aware, and like, I'm like, you guys know I know this is silly, right? Or that you know I know this is
can
absurd.
Can I tell you what our most recent favorite thing is to do to someone? I think,
please.
Can we attribute it to Stephen Rockwood? I don't know why, but I feel like it's getting Rockwooded.
Okay.
So the other day I was... maybe this will not be funny, so feel free to edit it out. I'm not very like tech savvy, despite starting a creative design agency. I'm just like, whatever. So I was in the cleaning cabinet and I turned to Mike and I was like, hey babe, what am I supposed to use again to clean the computer screen? Is it Shout? Which is like a stain remover, laundry stain remover. Yes. And he looked at me and was just like, no. And I just turned a corner and smiled like, you idiot. Like you thought that you idiot. I thought that I should use Shout stain remover on my laptop screen instead of Windex. But there was another one recently where what did we do? It's basically like just like trying to prove someone to be a dum-dum. But anyway, it's my most favorite game right now, and I don't know why I thought of that.
You just reminded me, my dad has a joke that he just cannot help himself for making every time Shout
comes up. And like anytime, and like father, like son, I can't resist jokes like that either. And so I'm in no way, I am him in this way. And also I am him in that, like, we often stain our shirts while when we're eating. Uh-huh. It gives me a hard time.
You're not alone.
All the time.
I'm with you.
And so my dad just came up and visited a couple days ago, and he got something on his shirt, and he's like, oh, well, I asked him, like, oh, you want us to wash that for you? We can get the stain out. He's like, oh, it's okay. I've got some shout in the car. And, you know, you just, get out! Get out! He's like, lifts his shirt and, like, screams at it. He has been making that joke
that
for, like,
is phenomenal.
That's really
and it, I laugh every single time.
Oh, my, like, God.
Like, get out!
Mike, you have to, you need to adopt this.
Yes, I'm doing that today.
Yes,
it's considered.
Unfortunately, we just did laundry. Otherwise, this would have been.
I haven't. No, we haven't done the rest of.
Oh,
the,
so we
the
still have a chance.
Yeah,
okay,
there's still a chance. Like, don't worry, we'll get this in today. Like, it's okay.
Oh, that's so good. That's peak dad joke. Yeah.
Totally. I mean,
but my, like, I'd say high quality.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. My dad's okay. Got high quality ones. Yeah. Cool. The only the. Okay, yeah. The only one that my dad makes on a regular basis, and I give him a hard time about it every single time, is when we go to restaurants. He, like, first of all, I have to say, my dad, super compassionate, very generous, loving guy. But he, like me, thinks that sometimes, like, saying the worst thing is the funniest thing. And so if a server comes up and says something like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, like, we don't have this thing that you wanted, or... You know, oh, if we had to wait longer than expected for something, and they'll come back and they'll say, like, oh, I'm sorry the coffee took so long, but here, we just brewed you a fresh cup, and they'll put it down. When they walk away, my dad will be like, tipometer is going down, you know? And I'll be like, Dad, that is not funny ever. That is just not, and it's not serious. He's like a very generous tipper, but he still thinks that that is like the funniest thing. I'm like, Dad, please don't make
Does
that
he
joke,
do
please.
It intentionally in earshot of the wait staff?
No, oh, but my okay. sister and I have been giving him a hard time because we feel as though he's not always aware of how loud his voice is.
Mm-hmm.
And so, right. So we'll be like, we're always like, no, Dad, don't do it. Just in case.
I feel like that's like a classic dad thing to have the restaurant bit. There's always, I have restaurant bits, like things that I do in restaurants, which I'm just trying to think of like one thing that I do all the time in a restaurant. But, I remember going to Europe and going around Europe and, and I was like,
Imagine bringing Michael Scott abroad is all I gotta say. him to Iceland and have him try and talk to the locals about
making subtle
that they do not
get. Word plays or stupid jokes at a restaurant.
In a foreign country.
The waiters are always like, I'm sorry? What's that?
And then he repeats himself like twice, and then I'm just like, please, let's stop.
I'm sorry, did you want some water? I don't know.
See,
we got
French.
The third voice.
French.
Yeah. Third voice.
We got it. We got two more left, guaranteed.
Got two guaranteed.
I mean, if we just go down the European...
No, let's have it naturally.
No, I'm just joking.
Then we went to Australia. Oh, man.
Yeah, making sarcastic small talk with foreigners is one of Mike's favorite.
Yeah, and it never lands.
The last time I made... Like the last time I made a risky, like heavily sarcastic joke with a server was like 15 years ago. Heavily sarcastic, you know, like really banking on them understanding that I was joking or else mm-hmm. I'm in trouble. I was at a restaurant with my friend Austin, and the the server came. This is definitely. I'm a dick on this side. I'm the asshole on this.
Ill-advised.
But I thought it was so obvious. But the server came up, and she was very nice, and she said, you know, she told us all the specials, and I said something like, oh, that sounds really good. And she goes, oh, yes, I love this. You should totally get it. And I was like, are you flirting with me? And she's like, no.
And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I thought you knew. No. I'm just, and she left and like, we got a new server. And I was like,
whoa, new server. She couldn't kick it?
I don't know why I thought it was going to be funny. And my friend Austin was like, what the hell is wrong with you? I was like, I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm so sorry.
I mean, I'm not trying to endorse putting someone in.
Was she an older woman? Was she your age? Like,
she was probably a little bit older than me.
Huh.
I think that in the right context that like wouldn't like if, yeah, I think it's true. It's like if you the person knows you're joking, it would have been funny. I don't think that's like, but I'm not trying to endorse like making someone uncomfortable by
no.
like flirting with them. But like,
he's like a 25-year-old kid. I'm assuming it's ish.
Yeah.
It seems like she was going through something at the time that like, which is totally fine. You know,
like I'm sure like that is. I would never dream of making a joke like that today, for sure.
Unless maybe it was with like an 80-year-old woman. What if it was an 80-year-old server?
Right,
she'd be like,
right.
She'd be like, absolutely.
That's
I
what
am.
I mean. Well, yeah.
And that was the thing is like, I felt at the time, I felt a pretty good camaraderie with the way I presented the situation. I was just trying to do it quickly, but like we talked a bunch and we like joked and we were like, mm-hmm. we were very friendly and it was like, and I had zero intention of trying to flirt. I had zero, like, I just thought for the split second, my gauge totally threw me off course. Right. And I just thought that was going to be funny. And it was just the worst. It was, and that was like the most, I was like, can we get the food to go? Let's just get out of here.
No.
Like, I'm so sorry.
Wow. just,
did the tipometer go down or up?
Oh, it's plummeting.
Plummeting. You didn't laugh at my joke. I'm a
somebody's
fragile white man.
White man fragility to go, please.
Somebody's not going to tip.
I'm probably going to cut all this out. Anyways. So I'm realizing that when we were discussing like your work dynamic and your like mom and popishness at Gander, I do feel as though that fits in with like one of the cards we pulled, which is
ding, ding,
Queen of Swords.
Mm.
And this is like, this is especially with like Mike, when you were talking, and this is something I do want to get back to is like Mike, you were also talking about how when you, when it comes to crisis or when it comes to a time of like high stress, you get hyper rational.
Mm-hmm.
And the Queen of Swords, according to this book, of course, reflects the rational, objective, fair witnessing mind. She sits upon a huge cloud in the air with a sword in one hand and a mask in the other. She is the mask cutter. She holds a mask in her hand as a symbol of having cut through her own masks, her own roles and defenses in order to retain her objectivity and clarity, and her childlike innocence and curiosity. This is mastery of the objective, rational mind, which is centered and deepening in consciousness. And also, this is it's the quality of mind that considers options fairly and demands authenticity and the abandonment of pretense. So I feel like I do feel as though that plays into a little bit to like your dual roles that you play. Like as far as like, Katie, you kind of driving yourself to go and seek, and Mike, you kind of driving yourself to like rein in and like, you know, become like a little bit more rational and things like that. I don't know. What does it make you guys think about?
What do you think the mask part about? Can you say that thing about the mask?
Yeah, I heard mask and sword a lot, and I was...
That was the thing that actually made me think of it. When you guys, so when Mike was talking about being Michael Scott in the group, yeah. like it made me think of the mask, and it made me think of like, yeah, putting on this like persona for the good of the group, you know, but also like when it comes down to getting down to business, you take off the mask. Like you're not doing your French server voice with the group when it's like deadline time or crisis time, or maybe you are.
He
I don't
is.
Know.
You'd be surprised. Yeah.
right.
Yeah. Oh, okay, but I'll read the part again about the mask. She sits upon a huge cloud in the air with a sword in one hand and a mask in the other. She is the mask cutter. She holds a mask in her hand as a symbol of having cut through her own masks, roles, and defenses in order to retain her objectivity and clarity and her childlike innocence and curiosity. The queen has the ability to counsel and consult others and has the wisdom to seek counseling and consulting for herself when necessary.
Hmm. I mean, I immediately thought of the Queen of England, who literally cuts away the mask of her. Like, we watched The Crown a little bit, mm-hmm. and not the whole thing. I don't know how it ends.
We're still in Princess Diana phase, so we have to go.
Glory days, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the Queen very much has to be unbiased, just, and rational, and has to, like, she can't think about her childhood dreams. It's a little bit sad to me, the idea of cutting away the mask of your child, like innocence and dreams for the sake of pure rationality and justice. But I do think that that is something that I do, is like me personally, try to take on the burdens of other people or like take responsibility for the sake of like getting something done. And so a lot of times I'll like take over a task that maybe should be someone else's job, or like I don't need to be bogged down with, because I feel like I'm like, you know, carrying water for other people on our team. And that could be good or bad. But that's just the first thing that came to my mind, is that like it's like a little bit of self-sacrifice is what I got from that. But I'm not sure if I'm reading that correctly.
I think the point is to hear a response, you know, like just what does it make you think of? And that's what it made you think mm-hmm. of. So I think that's what's important.
No, there's a right answer, Colin. And I need to know that.
And maybe on one of your other podcasts, you can find it. Okay. Not here, buddy. I think that sadness that you're talking about, I can totally relate with. And I think that that's kind of part of... that's what I like about Katie's drive to continue seeking, and I don't want to use the word chasing. Seeking feels better, although I'm sure that there are times where it is tiresome, as though you have been chasing, you know, like as though you're running. But I feel as though it's a constant desire to like, yeah, I want to keep learning. I want to keep challenging myself. I want to keep like rediscovering this curiosity in this context of our conversation. I don't think our childlike curiosity is a mask. Mm-hmm. I think what we put over our childlike curiosity is the mask. Mm. This illusion of adulthood, this illusion of, you know, being right. responsible adults that know all the answers and things like that. And by putting yourself sort of in a place of discomfort, a place of learning all the time, you're reinforcing that, like, no, I'm just a kid. I'm just, yep. you know, trying to figure that. This stuff mm-hmm. out.
That's interesting.
I don't mean to keep jumping in, but if you have something to say about in this response, but I just really love that, because, like, I oftentimes think about this in our design, in our business in general. Literally, the definition of our job is that we have to make the decisions. Like, we don't have to do all the work. Ideally, we're not trying to do all the work in our business. We are creative directors and business owners. So we ideally have the design team, other creatives, writers, everything that are doing the creative work. And literally what it sometimes feels like is that, like, we are the ones who just have to make the decision of what to do or not to do. And sometimes I try to remind our team of that. That's literally the difference, is that you're asking me to make the choice. In other words, I don't consider myself special in any way, or like I have any special talents or whatever. Sometimes I feel like we've just been given the responsibility of making the choice, and that responsibility can be taken by anyone. It's actually the people that we love working with the most that have a really strong opinion and bring those to the table. to us rather than just like, here are a bunch of ideas. What do you think is the best? We actually want people to bring great ideas that they're excited about and take that responsibility of like, we don't know anything better than you. If you want me to choose between these two things, I can choose one, but literally the power is in your hands. And I think there's like a illusion or a people forget about that, which the idea of like ownership can be available to anyone. I think not to undervalue us, but it's a funny thing that I feel a lot as like a business owner.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It feels like a structure that exists within this particular system where mm-hmm. it's like, you're the business owner. So you're the boss of like mm-hmm. the direction of where things go. But in like a family unit, a healthy family unit, the point is to really value everybody's input. You know, that's the reason why, especially like in the unit that you've created with Gander, you hire people because you want their perspective. You want their input. And I think the healthiest families, and what I imagine is going to be the case for your family at home, is going to be this curiosity to hear, like, Marlo, what do you want? What's going to make you happy? And we want to hear input there. And you know, when it comes to those decisions, obviously you can't do that right now, but you know,
we're working on it.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's literally like decision fatigue.
Okay, well, that ends part one of this wonderful conversation with Katie Levy and Mike McVicker. I absolutely adore these people. What a wonderful atmosphere they create in every room they enter, even if it's hundreds of miles away. I'm sorry that you can't see them as they're speaking. It adds extra delight to the experience. But one thing I love about this interview is they're sitting in their living room right in front of their window that looks out onto the street in Brooklyn. And every once in a while, I'm sure you've noticed, you hear the sounds of the city in the background. And it just, I don't know, it just makes me feel a little closer to them every time I hear it. And I love that. So that's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to take up a lot of time between episodes. Part two is posted, so please go there and listen. We cover so many wonderful topics. We discuss Buddhism. We talk about being present. Mike gives us a little lesson on game theory. You know, Mike and I both talk about being recovering people pleasers and more things just like that. Also, you get to find out whether or not we complete the 5-accent challenge that Mike has gone ahead and set for us in this conversation. And you get to hear the rest of the tarot card readings, which, by the way, I should note, I am in no way an expert in reading tarot or tarot, if you want to pronounce it that way. Not even close, but I've really enjoyed kind of getting into it over the last couple of years. I've had some wonderful experiences, especially with Mike and Katie. We've had some wonderful readings that felt like they went beyond coincidence. And the most important thing that I take from it, regardless of whether I believe that the cards are a message from the universe or anything like that, the cards provide a reflection for what I'm thinking about, for what I'm worried about. When I pull a card or something with a friend, I have no idea what they're thinking of. And when I tell them what the card means, their response is a reflection of where they're at, right? It's just it's a vehicle for us to self-reflect. And that, I think, is the most universal application, right? And obviously, if you want to get further into it and you want to research it, and if you believe deeper and deeper things associated with tarot, that's fine too. I'm into that. I think it's really cool. But as far as those of you who might not be familiar or might be skeptical about it, it doesn't have to be something that is magical or, you know, out there weird. It's just an interesting way to reflect upon your own psyche. Where is your mind? Where are your fears? Where are your hopes and dreams? What comes up for you when somebody puts down this card? What does that mean for you? And that in itself, I think, is very helpful. And so Mike and Katie, they've been there for some really fun sessions, which is why I did it during our conversation. So hope you're enjoying it. I certainly am. I'd like to take this moment also to thank our sponsor, Crooked Path Forge. Please go to crookedpathforge.org and use Find a Way's special promo code, Find a Hammer, all one word, for 10% off a purchase on the website. Any custom-made blades, axes, hammers, things like that, and also 10% off any workshops you might want to buy for yourself or a loved one. I highly recommend them, and I'm so excited that they're supporting the podcast. So thanks very much. Enjoy the next episode, and we'll see you next time.